afternoon, everyone, or whatever time of day it is right now. It's probably midnight for you, right? You're listening to this in the middle of the night because you can't go to sleep.
That's when I do it.
Congratulations, you're in luck.
It's this cheaper one's than
gonna put you right to bed.
I go to sleep to my sweet, sweet voice every night.
Okay, this is Diane. Sarah is here. Ken is here. Joe is here. I made him last this time so he doesn't feel bad. Like we're always trying to make him last because he's first.
This is getting so complicated.
The confusion is real.
I know. It's he's so touchy. You just have to be careful.
You can't put him in the middle.
Yeah.
No.
Then everybody has to be by him.
And that everybody's uncomfortable because I'm weird.
Because of the political situation now, forever, always has been, I don't know. But maybe I haven't always been paying attention. Lots of stuff is going on and everybody's mad. One of the things that I keep hearing get thrown around, especially when we're talking about gun laws, and possibly with abortion, a couple of the things that we really care about, is that you hear people all the time saying, well, the founders never intended that. That's not how the founders understood this when they said that. They never meant such and such. I have this propensity that when I hear somebody say that some official person like that thought something, I think, how do you know? And some people can say how they know and some people can't, but a lot of people are just saying what they've heard other people say because it furthers their argument. Well, the founders never intended us for have anything but muskets for hunting deer. Who told you that? Well, I don't know, somebody who wanted me to think that we only were supposed to hunt deer. So
why is it so hard to get a musket nowadays? You tried to find a musket lately?
What if I want to hunt an antelope?
The founders never intended you to hunt an antelope.
Imagine you're the deer.
You can only throw rocks at the antelope.
Very small rocks.
Bludgeon it to death with sand pebbles.
My way is not very sportsmanlike.
Or effective.
A slingshot, maybe.
I haven't had antelope in years.
Bunnies.
Either way, nobody's going to care what color pants he's wearing.
So what I tend to do is start going back and looking for primary sources, which means that if you want to know what Thomas Jefferson thought, you go back and read what he wrote, because there are no videos of him, in case anybody wasn't aware of that. But he did do a lot of writing. A lot of these guys did a lot of writing. And if they didn't, sometimes there are things in old newspapers, because people at the time leading up to the revolution were quite interested in politics. Not every single one of them. They were farmers out in the country just wanting to live. But they were starting to polarize long before the shot heard around the world, because they were mad at Britain. Why were they so mad at Britain? Oh, well, it was just a little 3-cent tea tax. What were they so worked up about? Why is that justification for fighting your mother country? Let's go back and find out what they were so mad about. And I was going to talk about today about Thomas Paine's Common Sense, which was published in January of 1776, which that year should ring a bell. Declaration of Independence was signed in July. This did have a lot to do with it, because people were really on the fence. A lot of them were going, okay, Great Britain is a really bad mother, but we're not trying to find a different one. We're just trying to get her to treat us right. So what could we do to get along? And then the other side was going, we're done getting along. We're going to be independent. No, that's way too extreme. We're not ready for that. So Thomas Paine wrote a little pamphlet called Common Sense, which sold over 500,000 copies, which is a lot of copies. But when it comes to finding primary sources and the causes of things and then the causes of those things, we have to keep going back a little bit farther than common sense. So let's go back to 1494, shall we?
This is before we had common sense?
Yes.
When everything was in black and white.
Yeah. A lot of other things. So anyway, the Treaty of Tordesillas was...
Not quesadillas.
No.
Tortitas, ditas?
Sounds very un-American to me.
It is. We're not talking about America yet. We're talking about Portugal and Spain.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
They talk like that.
Columbus had discovered something and he didn't know what it was, but he had been sailing.
Just a pimple.
not cancer.
Not a tumor.
You're going to make this take forever, and I was trying to be brief.
You're taking the wind out of her sails and Columbus's.
She used to like to be a teacher.
Okay, so anyway, Portugal and Spain were fighting over the whole world because they were going out and exploring and trying to figure out a way to get to the Indies, and Columbus ran into something that he thought was maybe the Indies or Japan or something like that. And so there we have a treaty that divided the world in half and said everything on this side is for Spain and everything on this side is Portugal's, and you guys leave each other alone, which would have been lovely if there weren't any other people involved, like, you know, the natives of South America and Africa and North America and that kind of thing. But this was the people, you know, Portugal and Spain, and I guess that the Pope sort of brokered this and said, all right, you guys knock it off. We're going to split it right in the middle. And you guys, each of you stay on your own side of the room. So, but then Britain and France are looking around and going, well, wait a minute, that's only two halves.
I think it was two halves.
Yeah, I'm sure it was two halves.
Definitely, two halves.
So when they went exploring, they sort of tried to stay north, and that's where they ended up in North America. But France and Britain, a lot of times, were crossing over each other and trying to have the same territory, and there was nobody telling them which side of the line to stay on, so they had to fight it out. The reason I mention this is because part of the beginning of the problem here was the French and Indian War, which was the North American theater of the Seven Years' War in Europe. So Britain and France are over here fighting, and France was more friendly with a lot of the Indians than Britain was, so they were on their side, and it got very ugly. So a lot of our Revolutionary War heroes got started in the French and Indian War. So when that got over, Britain was worse than broke. So it kind of reminds me of our legislature this year. What could we tax? We need a lot of money, so what could we tax? Let's think of every possible way to get some more money from the colonists, and we'll justify it by saying that, well, it was all spent in your defense. We had to build forts.
It's just for your safety.
That's right. And we already did this for your safety. So one thing they did was say, okay, they drew a line from Quebec down to Florida that kind of lines up with the mountain ranges that are there that were the western edge of the colonies, and said, all right, you're going to keep the Indians happy. Nobody can go farther west than this. No more settling, no more colonization. Thus far and no farther. And the colonists went, uh-huh, okay, whatever. But then they start with the long list of taxes that we hear about a lot. Did you? I don't know. Did you hear about this? The Sugar Act?
Did you?
Yeah.
Heard about the Sugar Act.
Okay, so.
That's what Matt Gaetz in trouble for.
There were a lot of taxes already. There were a lot of import duties and lots of things that you could call other things besides taxes, like we have now, where we call them fees.
Right.
It's just a small fee. So Britain was trying to control imports and exports so that the Americans could mostly only afford to buy things that they imported from, like the British East India Company would go to India, bring back the tea, go through Britain, come to the Americas, only buy our tea, don't buy tea from anybody else who brings it, don't buy molasses from anyone else, it has to come through us. And so they were trying to control imports and exports by using taxes. When they already had that kind of taxes, but in 1764, they sort of expanded the Sugar Act and said, we're going to put some more taxes on a gallon of molasses, a few cents worth of taxes per gallon, just a few cents.
Who needs a whole gallon of molasses?
They needed it to make rum. Mm.
Oh, that
everybody,
puts a new wheel on the wagon.
Everybody
but
should have some molasses.
Why is the rum gone? Right? Why is the rum so expensive?
Right.
I got a rum deal.
But they added some things to this one. Sugar, some wine, coffee, pimento, cambric, and printed calico, which those are from India, I believe, and further regulated the export of lumber and iron. So the lumber and the iron came from the Americas. Britain needed the lumber because they had been out of trees for a really long time. And so this is not just being an inconvenient tax on the American people, but it's ruining their livelihood. They've been sending things to Britain and buying things from Britain, and it's a lovely little back and forth trading kind of thing, but Britain is now determined to control the market, and that's what a lot of these taxes were for. Then there was the Currency Act, where they said, all right, you guys, no more messing around with the colonies having your own little banks and loans and issuing pieces of paper that say, you know, credit for you from this colony to that colony or whatever. It's all going to be Britain will control the currency. You're going to use British money and that's it. And we're in charge of that too. Okay, so maybe if the Americans hadn't sort of gotten used to kind of doing things the way they wanted to, this would have worked out okay. But they'd kind of been left alone. And that makes a lot of sense to me. If you can imagine that here's Britain, this little island with the king sitting in his palace and he never goes out anywhere and he's all insulated and everything, and Parliament coming in and saying, here's how we should control everything over in the Americas. We think that this is how it ought to work, with no idea what America was like, right, how big it is.
Right, and a lot of those settlers were pretty much abandoned there and had to make lives for themselves without the help of Britain. So these settlers set up a country, or set up everything that Britain needs. They're exporting lumber and buying and trading with Britain, but they were an abandoned people. They had to come up with things that worked for them, and then Britain tries to come in and say, hey, we're going to do it this way. It's like, that doesn't work here. That can't work here. We were trying that before, and you left us high and dry.
Right, because that kind of it kind of went in waves, I think, but there were just periods where Britain was busy doing something else and just went, ah, we'll take care of that later. And they're going, sitting there going, oh, guess we're on our own.
Right.
We just went through this in homeschooling, and I equated this to, you know, people in Montana or Wyoming dealing with the wolf situation and then having PETA or Washington, D.C. telling us that we can't shoot the wolves. Then you come live with the wolves. You come live with the wolves and tell us what you would rather do about it. It's the same kind of thing. Somebody really, really far away is telling you how you should structure your community, and it doesn't work because you've never been here.
Right.
We had a discussion. What about people that have completely destroyed their environment to tell us what to do with ours?
Right. I think we had that discussion with Seth whenever we were talking about the oil field.
I think that was where it was. Yeah. You might have to look that one up if you're listening.
The truth about fracking.
Part of the reason this matters to talk about that kind of thing that was that far back is that, I don't know, I totally lost my train of thought.
Is that it's kind of happening now.
Because we're trying to understand what the framers intended, and so we need to understand where they were coming from.
Right.
Which you should say.
Or we could just skip that part. The next one I want to talk about is the Stamp Act, and I think probably everybody has heard of that, but what in the world was it? Well, I printed it out, and it is about about 7 or 8 pages long. The Stamp Act was an official stamp that you would get on official parchments and things like that. So, number one, for every skin or piece of vellum or parchment or sheet or piece of paper on which shall be engrossed, written, or printed any declaration, plea, replication, rejoinder, demurrer, or other pleading, or any copy thereof in any court of law within the British colonies and plantations in America, a stamp duty of 3 pence. Now, 3 pence, again, 3 tiny little pennies, but there are...
Well, back then, pennies were pretty important.
Yes. Right, and I'm... Yes.
It wasn't just the stuff you threw out in the parking lot and said, good luck to the next guy that finds it. It was actually a penny was worth money.
Right. There are 54 of those. And that's before one other page of some other further and further and further more. Okay.
So every time you turn around, they want another 3 pence.
Right.
So right. Every time you jot something down on a sticky note, you have to have a stamp.
Well, not quite. It's talking right about like official paperwork that right you would turn into courts and things like that. But it goes on to more stuff.
Was post-it around then?
Of course.
It didn't
yes
come in as many colors because everything was still in black and white.
You just used molasses on the back of your paper. And
yep. And you had to hold it until it dried.
Which you had to pay tax on the molasses that you were putting on the back
right
of your sticky note.
Right.
Apparently, though, what they did is we're going to have this little 3 pence tax that we're going to put on anything you have to have notarized. In effect.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, from now on, you're going to have this notarized and this notarized and this notarized
right
and mm-hmm this notarized and this notarized. And every time you turn around, there's another thing.
Stop. Taxing you if you have an SUV or whatever size your car is, a proper tax for however many miles you drive. Everywhere you turn, you're getting taxed for something. You can't die.
They call it fees now.
Right,
you
right
can't,
yeah. Don't, these are fees.
Yeah.
These are fees.
Yeah. You can't die without the government wanting money.
From your grieving widow.
Right, right. And they'll come get it.
Right. Who has to have your death certificate or else she can't get her all of the things that you put in place for her to be taken care of.
Right. Which I don't think that your death has any bearing on the government, but whatever.
Mine will.
So
it'll be their fault.
The last thing I wanted to say about that was just that I, you know, you think about 3 pence. Was that a penny? Does it matter? Back then, a pound was actually 240 pennyweights of silver. So there are 240 pennies in a pound. So where we think about a penny is a hundredth of a dollar, this penny is a 240th of a pound. And there are 12 pennies in a shilling. So some of these little fees are pence, but some of them are shillings. So they're not all just one little 240th of a pound. But that was a lot more money than for us. I mean, you could actually buy things with pennies and shillings and
a
things.
A villa in Vermont.
What people were living off just a few shillings,
right?
A month back
right.
then.
Right. It, yeah.
I, that's why they needed the molasses. You got to have something to flavor them shillings.
But if you are one of the traders that is trading with England, and every time you have to have an official ship document saying what's aboard ship or whatever, then all of a sudden you're being charged pennies on the dollar, which accumulate, as every business person knows, every time you send a ship back and forth. So England had their little grubby fingers in everything. And from my understanding, part of the reason was that they were specifically trying to keep the colony people, the colonizers, I almost said.
Colonists.
The colonists from being able to actually create any profit for themselves. We want you to be the machine creating all of these goods, but we don't want you to gain any profit because then you gain power and then that's not okay.
Yeah, power is scary to people that are in power.
Well, and a lot of it was that for the British king, he's thinking, this is all my stuff. These are my people. These are my goods. These are my natural resources. What are you people doing having businesses and things
right.
that don't actually go to enriching me?
Somebody came out not too long ago and said, we don't need these businesses that aren't supplying more than 15 jobs. We don't want them anyways. So everybody's complaining about the taxes for these small businesses. And this guy comes out and says, well, we don't need those businesses anyway. Your government officials are looking at you as a paycheck. You belong to them, and they're not scared to tax you to death. They don't care, because they're looking at, just like the king was looking at the colonies and saying, yeah, this is all my stuff. Your elected officials are looking at you and saying, yeah, this is all my stuff. So
right. And we're
you
back
didn't build
around,
that.
Right. We're back around to what the point was, is that we're just sitting here letting ourselves be washed downstream back into the same kind of thing where this isn't our stuff. It's the government stuff. And they're going to tell us what we can do with our stuff and how much of it we get to keep.
Right.
Okay. So even though maybe 3 pence sounds like a little bit, we're talking about 3 pence on every pound of tea. Now, I didn't even think to see how much a pound of tea costs. But so here's your ship captain coming in with his tea. Somebody pays the tax before he can even take it off the ship. And then when it goes, that's not in the store yet. That's not the price that the people are paying. So they're going to charge him more for that because the sellers have to cover the costs of the Stamp Act and things like that. So you had to get your official piece of paper when you got off the ship and all those kinds of things. So I don't know, maybe just kind of try to keep that in your mind. 240 pennies to a pound, 12 pennies in a shilling.
Well, when you're asking why would you fight a war over something like this, if the government feels like the government or the king or whoever it is, if they feel like they own all of your stuff, that you didn't build that nonsense, then they can tell you what to do with it. If you have a small business and they own the building and your vehicles and your equipment and your goods and everything else, and they're taxing you into bankruptcy or just non-existence, that means that they think that they own your stuff. And that means they can tell you what to do with it, and you lose independence. And then it becomes not a financial issue. It becomes a moral issue of, no, you didn't build that. I built this and it's mine, and I get to decide who I serve and what I do and what I produce and how much.
And not to mention that, you know, the government, they go to the people that are having these struggles because they're being taxed to death, and they say, well, it's not the government's fault. It's these people over here. And so you should be mad at them because you're in such a downtrodden way. But while the government's just taking money out of their paycheck, taxing them for their cars being driven, taxing them for this, taxing them for that,
you know, a pack of smokes is probably only about $1.50. The rest of it's tax.
Yep. Well, and they thought they could make us quit.
We're just going to go without food if
we will prevail.
One of the points that Thomas Paine ends up making in Common Sense is that the British government was so complicated that you didn't know who to blame when you had a problem, that you could go to whoever it was and say, hey, this doesn't seem right to me. And you then that guy can go, it's not my fault. It's because of him.
Right.
So we're talking about conservatives want smaller government, so you can go to one person, like your county official or whatever, and say, this isn't right. The road that just went through the middle of my front yard is not right. And the county official can't say, not my problem. The state of Wyoming decided to do that. And when you go to the governor, he says, oh, the federal government made me do it. We want it simple enough so that we know who we're dealing with face to face. And then with the taxes and things, you have the Sugar Act, the Currency Act, where they said, you're going to use our money, the Stamp Act, which was over, you know, all these 50, 60 things that we're going to tax. We haven't even gotten to the Quartering Act, where they're going to say that the soldiers have to live in your buildings.
Right.
So we'll do that next time.